going to have Jennifer's cues. I just want to do a couple of things before that. Number one, I have a correction and an apology to make. I mentioned that Mark Zuckerberg statements came out of an interview. They actually came from a video statement from him. This statement is available if you want for me to send you the link. You can see it in full. Just text me through 0491-064-669. We'll send it through to you so you can watch by yourself. But also, I want to remind everyone that time is running up and we have a resource, a fantastic book that's really going to brighten your year, which is Devotions from Down Under, a book with 26 of the most iconic inventions by Aussies and some Kiwis as well. You're going to learn, you're going to know what, you know, everyday objects that you have that were created, invented by Aussies, and each one of them comes with a spiritual application. So it's going to be very, very interesting. And I'd like to call in now Jennifer Skews to the show. Jennifer, Happy New Year. It's great to have you back with us.
Oh, it's good to be back. Time to get into work again.
That's right. And, well, maybe a bit of a stressful time for some, maybe a joyful time. I must say that I love being on holidays, but I actually got sick. So I was just like, you know what? I just want to go back to my normal routine here.
But yes. Yeah, that helps.
So, but Jennifer, tell us a little bit more. So last year we finished our conversation. We were talking about, you know, the gut and the brain and, mm-hmm. and nutrition and lifestyle in general and how our lifestyle affect our gut and in turn the brain. What would you like to continue sharing with us about this topic or a new one?
Well, what I did, I've done a little bit of research on, because at the beginning of the year, we often set goals and yes. what we call those New Year's resolutions. And we do it often to do with health and diet and all that sort of stuff. But I did a little bit of research. Do you know the origins of New Year's Eve resolutions or New Year's resolutions?
Good question. I don't know. It kind of felt just natural to me. And actually, I wasn't even thinking, is Jennifer accessing my mind here? Because I was just thinking about like last night. Okay, I need to get some goals for this year. So no idea. Okay. Where did it start?
Well, it over 4,000 years ago was its origins in ancient Babylon.
Really?
And yes. And it was to do with the farmers and their almanac, and that they would, and it was very superstitious oriented. You know, it's got pagan origins, of course, but it was to do with the calendar year and the farming season. And they'd make promises to repay their debts. And apparently ancient Rome had pledged good behavior in the coming year. So they got very mixed along the way. Isn't that interesting?
Very interesting.
Yes.
There you go. Yeah. Babylon, from Babylonian farmers to us now today.
That's it.
But you know what? Irrespective of the pagan origins, I think it's, you know, I think that the Bible also calls us to really evaluate yes. our lives from time to time and to, you know, inquire of the Lord to give us wisdom into how can we best glorify him. So, but the thing is, I do not know about our listeners, but I have fallen short so many times. Maybe I started with a new habit. Maybe it's exercising more or something like that. And I get strong for a couple of weeks, maybe a month. Yeah. And then it's just everything gets back
it
to the old self.
Out. Absolutely.
How do we get out of this trap?
Well, we make a commitment, and when we make a commitment, we're going to do it. And when we don't, we feel like we failed. You know, so that actually is not healthy psychologically when you do that sort of thing. Okay. So what we need to do is look at, and this doesn't have to be at the beginning of the year, but that's where we sort of tend to focus this sort of thing, because I think we need to reset our goals and reevaluate, you know, as the Bible says, throughout the year. And particularly if we go, well, hang on, what's happening in my life? And go, right, let's have a look at where I've come from, where am I going? And that's a good thing to do. But often, as I said, our New Year's resolutions tend to be around health. I'll do more exercise, I'll lose more weight. Mm-hmm. And look, that's all very well, but then people usually do something radical. Right, every day I'm going to do this, and it's not realistic. Mm. So we don't set a realistic goal. We set a goal that sets ourselves up for failure. And this is the problem. So certainly I believe it's good to have health goals, because if we're not healthy, life is miserable. Yeah. So, yeah. But there is a very good principle that some people listening might have heard of. It's called the SMART goal.
Okay.
And I don't, it's an acronym. And first of all, your goal has to be specific, right? It has to be measurable. In other words, what quantity is it? And sometimes our goals are unrealistic. Yeah, they're not very specific. Oh, I'm going to lose weight.
Okay.
But, okay, how am I going to do that? What's a specific goal? Well, I could have a look at maybe how much I eat might be the goal. So we break it down to a smaller goal. Okay. And it has to be measurable. So how can I measure it? Well, maybe I could measure it by, you know, for a meal by plate size, have a smaller plate, for example. Mm-hmm. And how can I measure success? So what is the realistic outcome for that? So it's got to be measurable.
I want to lose a kilo, for example.
Yes. So how will I know when I've reached the goal? Mm-hmm. So being specific about what we want to accomplish. So just doing a general statement, I'm just going to get fitter and exercise every day, but we haven't said what exercise. Is every day realistic? Right? Okay. Is it achievable is the other one. So first of all, measurable. How do I know when I've reached the goal? As you said, well, I'm going to do this and lose a bit of weight. And how about I work at losing a kilo? That's a realistic goal. Okay. And if it doesn't.
Yeah. So is there any tip to find out if it's achievable or not? Because sometimes we don't really know if it's achievable. Is there really been a sort of a wisdom?
Yes. Yes. Is it realistic? In other words, to achieve it, is it realistic?
Okay.
With effort and commitment. And this is what the resolution is. We commit to do something. And again, to be achievable, have we got the resources to achieve the goal? If not, where are we going to get them from? But looking at health goals, they're realistic. For example, if I decide I'm going to be healthier, and this is where I know we're talking about the gut and that, exercise is brilliant for the whole system. So if I say, right, I'm going to exercise, well, how about you start with 2 days a week, get yourself organized, have your walking clothes out if you're going to walk or go to the gym or go swimming, and do things that set the goal in place, like get it ready the night before so that tomorrow morning when I get up, this is what I'm doing. So it becomes achievable when we do things like that.
That's very interesting that you mentioned that, Jennifer, because I guess you're right. Like we often, you know, certainly in my experience, I often extrapolated and exaggerated my ability to follow through. And I was reading the story of a man lost 50 kilos, just, you know, natural way, no medications, no surgeries, anything. And one of the things that he says, like, his goal was, I want to go to the gym every day. But then and it looks like it's unachievable for a lot of people. But then that's the caveat. For him, he says, look, I'm going to do 5 minutes of exercise per day only.
Right. Excellent.
And he would go there to the gym, just like do like half a set of something. Then you come back.
And that was it.
But I think that what he wanted is like, he wanted to create a habit of actually going there and having that in his routine.
Yes.
So he made it like in a bite size, in a smaller, habit.
Yeah. One of the things in science they find with the brain can cope with a chunk. So the bite size is the chunk. So if I get up and I walk for 10 minutes in my neighborhood 3 times a week, that's realistic and achievable, right?
All right.
So it becomes a habit. And when you keep doing it, you enjoy doing it because you see the results or you experience the results. But one of the other things, because we've looked, S is then a SMART goal, specific, measurable is the M, achievable is the A, the R is it relevant?
Relevant, okay.
Is it significant for your life? Well, if you're having a health problem, it's definitely significant. This is why I like health goals at the beginning of the year. What do I need to do to keep my health going, to maybe feel a bit fitter? You know, for me, it's trying to get to bed earlier at night. So I'm starting with, say, 15 minutes earlier than I'm been doing, and then I keep peeling it back. So that's an achievable goal, whereas I say, right, I'm going to go to bed at 9 o'clock. It's not realistic for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. So we've got to make it realistic as well as achievable. So what's relevant? If it's getting a better quality sleep, is it improving your gut health by what you eat? And you can't go, well, I'm just going to not eat any of this junk food I live on and I'm just going to be totally healthy, not realistic. Whereas if you go, right, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to stop having takeaway every day. You know, I'm going to the extreme here.
Yes.
And I'm going to go and, or I'm, instead of buying takeaway, I'm going to go and buy myself a healthy salad, for example. And I'll do that once a week. And you get to the point you start enjoying it because junk food, after a while, you go, well, it's not very nice. Right. So you're changing by habit and then you change the taste and the taste buds and you want more healthy food. So it's doing that achievable goal. Okay.
Okay. All right. And yeah. What about the tea? I'm curious about the tea.
It has to be timely. Okay. When will you achieve this goal is the question. So how long will it take? Right. So if I'm going to exercise to feel a bit fitter, I need to give myself a bit of time. You know, I'm going to have to look at maybe I'll do a 2 month block and see how I'm going.
Okay.
So it's timely, and then I'll, and you might, as I said, do it maybe twice a week, 20 minutes or even 10 minutes. Like, you know, you said that gentleman did 5 minutes at the gym and that was achievable. That's all he could manage at
that
time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he saw results because he lost weight. I'm sure he did other things as well.
Yeah. I think over time he increased because the 5 minutes until he got that in the habit and he said, oh, you know what? I can do 10 minutes. I can do 15 minutes. It's, And then he built from there.
Yes. Yeah. So you achieve, when will you achieve the goal? He achieved the goal when he went every day for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And once he's doing that consistently, so maybe he gave himself a period of time.
And I think that this is the point as well, Jennifer, because look, I think that certainly I can speak for myself, but I'm often quite motivated and I want rapid and fast results and I want them now.
That's
but then
it.
The things of God and the things of nature, they often they take time.
Take
don't they?
Time, absolutely.
How can we get to terms with that?
Well, this is where we need patience, perseverance, and determination. And people don't usually have that. As you said, it's this thing of instant. I want it now. You know, like I've got a credit card, I can go and buy it now. And I'd save up for things instead of having a credit card when I was growing up. So I got into a good habit of not just going and spending money mindlessly.
Yes.
So there's things that we do. But I think in picking a goal for the year and to do what we're talking about, we need to not overstep the mark. In other words, not make it so huge. So looking at one thing you want to change, and it might be a small thing initially, right? And then look at a plan, which is what we've said. Be specific about that goal. When do I know I'm achieving it? Well, for you, it might be for the next 2 months, yeah, and I've walked every day or I've walked 3 times a week. Yeah, I've done 10 minutes and like you say, I can do more. So this is where people are impatient. They, as you said, instant gratification. I want it now instead of, and then they give up.
Very good. Have you set some smart goals for yourself for this year? Do you have some that you'd like to share with us? I actually have one that I can share.
Well, mine is to go to bed earlier. I'm a bit of a night owl.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that is my goal to actually do that. And but I get a bit right. I've got to really whack it back for far too much, and then it's not achievable. So I'm working in 15-minute increments just to get that hour earlier.
Oh, I see. Look, I'm trying to get more into the garden as my exercise.
Okay.
However, the crazy rain that has been falling down is just kind of militating against my, I have to do something garden related because otherwise I'll just like, you know, I'll lose my momentum. But my goal is to go to the garden and attend the garden for, you know, 5 days a week.
Okay.
That, yeah.
How often are you when you're doing it 5 days a week, how long are you spending in the garden? 10 minutes, 15 minutes, half an hour?
Look, that's a good point. I didn't have that in my smart goal, but, it was not very smart. I think it was more of a dumb goal. That being said, now that I'm learning this with you, I want to spend, you know, at least 30 minutes. I think it's achievable.
Okay. Yeah, and have a look at what needs to be done in the garden. It might be your weeds take over. I'm going to spend 30 minutes weeding this week.
That's right.
And then, Yeah, and then you might, because when you look at a garden, it's so much to do. It's that's why you've got to have an achievable goal and break it down to that chunk.
Absolutely.
And don't get distracted. Often we then start looking at other things and go, oh, it's too hard, I won't achieve it. No, come back to that chunk. What's that one thing you were going to do? Because when you succeed doing that one little thing, it gives you a momentum.
Jennifer, Okay. Thank you. We do have to keep moving here, but I'm just so grateful that we've got to have that conversation about smart goals. I'll tell you how I'll go with them. And what about your radio friend? Do you have smart goals for the beginning of the year? Let us know. We'd love to know and celebrate, you know, and pray as well for your goals. We're going to know. So thank you very much, Jennifer. We're looking forward to have you again next week with us.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
You're listening to The Breakfast Show on Faith FM. This is the second part of our show where we are going to dive deep in the Bible through our 20 million movement study guides that you can download for absolutely free. If you like the link, I can send it to you, or you can just access sabbath.school on your web browser, or you can download the Sabbath School app, Sabbath with double B. It's a bit of a word that a lot of people are not necessarily familiar with. But, that's one word that we want you to get familiar with, Sabbath School. It's a beautiful word, the Sabbath. Now, we have some news as well that from the previous segment that we didn't get a chance to talk about. So we're going to talk a little bit about them as well, if we have the opportunity. And also, we have questions, we have comments from our friends, and we have quiz questions, a fresh new batch of quiz questions for you, radio friends. So let's start with the quiz question, shall we?
Certainly. So this is our easiest one of the day. So okay. I'm hoping that everybody can get this one correct. Jesus was crucified between two blank. So this is not a passage from the Bible. This is just a statement of fact that I want the answer to. Jesus was crucified between two blank. Text in on 0491-064-669. Both of the guys in the studio have gotten it correct already.
Okay, cool.
So you can't beat them, but we are like 30 seconds ahead of you. And live is live, but it's still a slight delay for you. But text in anyway at 0491-064-669. Jesus was crucified between two what?
All right. Very good. So we have a few questions that have been sent here. Let's respond to them. So first of Wayne. Wayne had a thought about phileo and agape. He said, hey, just a thought, is this kind of right? So phileo love is a love in this world that we can't understand. But Jesus says that he is not of this world. Agape are like the words from Jesus' mouth. Would agape be the understanding of what Jesus gave to us, his life? So it would include freedom to love Jesus, freedom to accept Jesus, freedom to be in Jesus' peace. Agape being a heavenly love that we can only understand through Jesus. Agape will come to everyone when Jesus comes again, as everyone will be changed in the twinkling of an eye, and everyone will experience agape forever. What do you reckon, Dan? What sort of stands out to you?
Yeah, I resonate with some of the ideas there. From a strictly linguistic point of view, I would say that even an atheist can understand the dictionary definition of agape love.
Okay. Yeah.
But there is truth in terms of the real, you know, the depth of experience of that love can only be experienced in a relationship with God.
I like that. I agree with you. And I'll also say as well that when Jesus come again, not everyone will be changed in the twinkling of an eye, but those who have really experienced that, agape with God, you know, who had, surrendered their lives to the Holy Spirit and to Jesus. So both can be experienced. We see that certainly phileo is something that everybody would experience, I would say. Whereas agape, as you said, even non-Christians can experience, but again, the breadth of it, the height of it, the length, the full length of it, It's only comes through looking at God and seeing what he does and experiencing his love. I don't think that he's the ultimate and the richest source of agape love. And I think that we will never be able to reach the bottom.
And the, in a strange way, it required the rebellion of humanity to fully get to the depths of agape love, because if it hadn't been for our rebellion, Jesus would not have had to die for our sins. And that is the ultimate demonstration of agape love.
Absolutely. Giving your life for your enemies. Mm. Giving your life for those who do not deserve. Very good. So hope that helps, Wayne. So, good thoughts there. Ben said, hey, my son and sister's birthday is in January. And I think that my sister's in America. My son would love a cookbook. He likes cooking with his mom. So, Shell,
I've been communicating with Ben.
Okay.
It is, if you're texting in from your phone, then it needs to be your birthday.
That's right.
Correct. So I have told him that if his son wants to text in from his own phone, then
fantastic.
He can do that. Yeah. Because you won't be able to text in. You only get one birthday a year. So if you want to claim somebody else's one, then you can do that still. So if you wanted to claim your child's birthday instead of your own, you could, but you're only going to get the one.
All right. So, there you go. So if you have a large family, don't get extra entries. One per person. Very good, very good.
Also, we had Freco who wanted
to
comment about the song. He said, hi, Shell and Brecky Show. It's Freco, Love the Last Song. That one was by Lois in India. This Valley is for Me, that he loved. Yeah. And it's good to hear from you, Freco. It's been a long time. Good to have
you
back.
All right. Good to hear you, Freco. Great that you're enjoying the song selection here from The Breakfast Show. Vernon also said, hey, can there be any sign to leave the cities in the end of times? What do you reckon then?
Yeah, so interesting. I'd answer from the Bible on that. I'm going to have to get the answer from the Bible myself because it's not coming straight to mind. But Matthew 24 says, Jesus said to the disciples, when you see something like, or maybe it's in Luke 21.
The abomination of desolation surrounding the city.
Yes, then flee. Then know that it's time to flee to the mountains. So there are some principles there, like that experience has already happened in the Roman army surrounding Jerusalem back in the first century. But there's some principles there when you see the abomination of desolation, which is a whole Bible study in itself. And we can see some elements of that, of the corruption of governments through bringing in religious ideas and the corruption of religion through bringing in, government mandates. What we know as the abomination of desolation being the corruption of, the way that we do things and the way that we see God, the way that society it governs itself, and we are seeing that. From the Bible, when you see the abomination of desolation, that is a sign to get out of the cities, according to Matthew 24. I don't think there's one particular event or one, the event has already happened that Jesus was talking about, but there are some principles there that we can apply in our lives.
Hey, look, I think that's good. That's good balanced response. And I think that, better to depend on the Holy Spirit. And God, when is the right time? And make provisions so that you are ready. Because let's say that God says it's tomorrow. Are you ready to go tomorrow? Or no, but if you have been preparing for that tomorrow 10 years ago and every day you've been doing something about that, then you'll be ready. So I would say depend on the Holy Spirit on that one. And I think that the signs of the times when, they, in the same way that it was clear to the Christians in the times of Jesus, when it was the time to leave Jerusalem because otherwise they would be destroyed. I think that similarly that would happen to us as well. I don't think that the Holy Spirit will, if we are genuinely seeking and learning and trying to understand and get better understanding on that matter. So I would say, pray about that and make preparations. According to your capacity, according to your capability. But what I also want to say is the other side of things. Don't get too carried away to the point of being obsessed with that idea so that you're losing your influence among the people that you have, around yourself right now. And I'll just give you one example. I once met a man who thought, look, in the end, the world's coming to an end. I'm going to, run to the hills. He basically, actually, he was hiding in a national park. I would suggest illegally. And he just like, you know, but he was a very resourceful man. You know, he was a carpenter. He was just like, you know, camping there. He was living there for a couple of years. But even him himself said, look, you know, it's wearing me out. I thought that Jesus would be coming sooner than that. But the thing is, it's the idea, I think, of the country leaving. One of the big things is just providing a wholesome environment for you to grow your family. But I think you kind of defeat the purpose a little bit if you're hiding, if you're going to a place that is so far away, so far removed from everyone, that you won't let your light shine. You won't be able to be a witness and to prepare others. And I think that there's that balance that has to be taken into account. You don't want to hide yourself and isolate yourself and become a monk somewhere, you know, and cut short your influence as a Christian over older people.
Yeah, the purpose of moving to the country is not about self-preservation, and you know, getting away from the world entirely. There are elements of that, and you know, we want to bring up our kids in an environment where, you know, they're not surrounded by
crime and violence and vice. Yeah.
So there are some elements of that, but the main objective of country living is being in a place where we can grow to understand God and connect with God better, but also to serve God and to reach people back in the city from where we are. So from an outpost, that we often use that word outposts to describe what country living is and what the purpose is. It's not to isolate ourselves from everything, but to be in a place where we can learn good life skills and learn connection with God in a better way than we can in the city, but also to be able to reach and connect with people in the city.
Like it's a place where you're able to recharge your batteries, you're able to connect with God, flee from the distractions, so that you can be even more effective in your work to save others and to be a witness to others.
Yeah, definitely.
I love that. Yeah. Very good. It's a great conversation. Thanks, Vernon, for your questions, and thanks for your listenership as well. There's only a couple of minutes remaining here. Just going to go quickly here. There's a movie about Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Dietrich Bonhoeffer is a man that, if you've been in the Christian walk, you probably have heard about him. It's often, Dietrich Bonhoeffer is often quoted in the context, like, hey, what about Dietrich Bonhoeffer? Because particularly when Jesus is talking about the Sermon of the Mount and giving the other cheek, you know, to your enemies and loving your enemies, says, hey, but Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the whole idea is that Dietrich Bonhoeffer, there is a myth about him. And I'll say that this is a myth, that he was actively personally involved in a plot to assassinate Adolf Hitler. Turns out that as historians study his life, like, he never was involved with that at all. He was aware of it, but he was never involved, and actually he was against it. What's happened is that there's a movie from the evidence, historical evidence that there is about Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Yes, he wanted Hitler out. He wanted to do something about it, but not in a non-violent way. But people attribute him so much. So look how biased are this topic. So there's a movie that come about him by Angel Studios, which was involved with the series The Chosen in the beginning. I think that they had a bit of a breakout with Dallas Jenkins there, and basically the title of the movie is Bonhoeffer, Pastor, Spy, Assassin. He's like, and basically they released this movie. It's actually coming to Australia in the beginning of March, apparently. But the thing is, 86 out of the 100 adult descendants of Bonhoeffer's brothers and sisters, because Bonhoeffer was one of eight. I don't think he had any kids, but he's, you know, they were a close-knit family. Actually, Dietrich's brother was also killed by the German government for quote-unquote conspiring against that. I'll tell you how he conspired, but basically, this is what they said. We are horrified to see how the legacy of Dietrich Bonhoeffer is increasingly being distorted and misused by right-wing extremists, xenophobe, and religious agitators. Never would he have seen himself associated with the far-right or violent movements such as Christian nationalists or others who are trying to appropriate him today. On the contrary, he would have strongly and loudly condemned these attitude. So basically his family is saying, hey, look, this movie is very, very, very biased. It looks like you're using Dietrich Bonhoeffer's story to, to promote a certain political message or theme, but it's not historically accurate. And I'll tell you in a second when we come back here about what did he actually do to get in trouble.
You're listening to The Breakfast Show. Connect with us on 0491 064 669.
All right, so Dietrich Bonhoeffer, he actually worked for the German intelligence, you know, for a while. So that's part of, you know, so he actually was aware of a number of assassination plots about Hitler. But because he was aware, it's not necessarily meaning that, like, he number one, he was part of it. He was not, there's no evidence. And then number two, that doesn't mean that he agreed with it.
He was a conspirator.
That's right. Yeah, what he did, what he did get killed by the, by, he did believe in standing up. He did believe in social justice. He did believe that Christians should do more than just pray. What he did was he was involved in Operation 7, which is a nonviolent scheme that was trying to help 14 Jewish men and women to escape Germany. So he was convicted for that, for helping to smuggle some Jews out of the country. And yes, he did use some deception. But he said, look, and that's kind of where you're navigating the fine lines between, should I save them or should I, you know, tell the government that I'm doing this? And I think that in this case, he made the right moral choice in that regard. It's a different conversation.
That is an interesting.
It is a conversation, right? Yeah. And then the second thing that he was charged for by the German government that led him to his death was because he was subverting military power. So what happens is that he was basically helping other young men not to become soldiers in Hitler's army. He's basically encouraging them to become conscientious objectors. And the German government said, no, look, your job was supposed to be the opposite. You're supposed to be encouraging these young men to wear the uniforms and get the guns and get that. Why are you doing the opposite? And I think that you dodged the draft yourself so basically these were the crimes, quote unquote, that Dietrich Bonhoeffer committed. So, there's some very interesting, quotes by him and conversations. And I think that he's definitely, a Christian figure of modern history. I would agree with the title martyr that they gave to him. Mm-hmm. But certainly, apparently from all the good scholarship that there is about Dietrich Bonhoeffer, he was not into assassinating anyone. And then I think that would be quite a stretch to his theology as well.
Mm. So, yeah. Interesting. I'd heard both sides of that. Now, I don't know enough. I'm not a Bonhoeffer boffin to know what the truth is in that. So thank you for enlightening me.
That's the story there. And there's a bit of that. And then finally, there's a Joe Biden clip, which, shall we play the clip? There's a bit of a clip from Joe Biden. Let's play the clip about Joe Biden, and where he's, using the Lord's name in vain.
The only thing, by being the oldest president, I know more world leaders than any one of you ever met in your whole life.
So Joe Biden is just, using some curses there. He's using God's name in vain. And again, Dan, I think that in the beginning of the show, you quoted a psalm that I think is very good. Just don't put your hope in princes in whom there's no hope, not in the sons of men, you know?
Yeah.
And again, Niccolò Machiavelli, he's a 16th century political writer. He wrote this and it still holds true. He says, look, for people that are in power, you have to appear to be religious, but don't really be religious at all, because religion is not going to let you be a good politician. But you have to appear. So, Biden often comes, yes, I'm a Catholic. I vouch for Catholic values and so on. But there you go. Just breaking one of the commandments. And surely enough, taking the Lord's name in vain is more than, saying words just like Joe Biden saying. It's also living a lifestyle, calling yourself a Christian, but living a lifestyle that is contradictory to your profession of faith. That's ultimately the ultimate way of taking the Lord's name in vain. But we should really watch our words. I actually have a Bible verse that I want to share, not only to take the Lord's name in vain. I think that profanities in general, they shouldn't have a place in the Christian's mouth. And I think here in Australia, often we, culturally, there's a subculture that, you know, swears a lot and uses lots of F-bombs and whatnot. And, but you know what? This is not Christ's way. I'll read a verse for you here. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29 says, "Let no unwholesome or rotten word ever proceed from your mouth, but only such a word that is good for edification according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear."
Mm. Such a good principle. I feel sorry for Joe Biden, given that, you know, his mental capacities must have been diminished. And I think, you know, everyone's realizing that now.
Yeah.
So, you know, understandable, you know, that he lets some language through that he in his better mind, in his better judgment,
probably he wouldn't use it.
However, yeah. I think there's a principle there that's important for all of us. And that is that if we make a habit of using unwholesome language in our everyday life, it's going to be hard to make sure that filter is in place for, you know, the right audience all the time. So there are some, you know, there's some habits and principles in our daily conversation with whoever it is that we're talking to. That's important.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, it'll come back to bite us.
And it's a way of witnessing. Look, I used to work with investment banking then, as you know, in my previous, you know, career, before becoming a pastor. And one of the things that in investment banking world, like, you know, swear words are the norm.
Mm.
Out of every 10 words that people say, like five of them are swear words. It's just part of the culture.
Mm.
And when I learn about these verses, and I was part of that culture myself, right? I didn't know any better. And then I learned, like, hey, you know, I think that Jesus' way for me is a bit different. And I stopped and I made this decision. I said, ask God to help me. And I stopped and, you know, and that was it. And for many, many years, I didn't use any swear word. And then this one day, for whatever reason, I did swear. The whole room, there's like 30 people in the bank that I was working. Everybody just stopped everything they did. They're looking at me and saying, "Scaffy, are you swearing?" I was embarrassing as you can imagine. And I was rebuked as well. But at the same time, I realized, wow, people, they notice even the things that you don't say.
Mm,
and I think, and I took that as an encouraging thing, you know, to say, hey, you know what? People do notice. It's actually, they actually appreciate when, you know, they can talk to someone that can use the vast range of available English vocabulary, which is amazing and beautiful. They don't need to be using just the worst words in that collection.
Yeah.
Very good. All right. I think that this is it. I think we covered heaps of what's going on in the news and what people are talking about. So hopefully when you go about your day, you will have a thing or two to talk with your friends, with your colleagues, with your family. I wanted to change gears a little bit, Dan, and talk about God's law. Let's get back into our Bible study.
Yeah,
because
awesome.
There is one word here that is going to be crucial for us to understand God's love and justice. And that word is the word covenant. It's a word that we often don't use, but the Bible is, you know, that talks about it all the time, all the way. Even when it's not talking directly about it, it's making reference to this idea of a covenant. And I wanted to explore it with a little bit with you, because I think it's a very, very interesting concept. And the Bible verse that I wanted for us to start with is Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 6 to 9. We're going to see that word being used in connection with other words. And we're going to have a bit of a conversation about that one. So Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 6 to 9. If you have that ready with you, Dan, in front of you, just, you know, feel free to read it for us.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
It's Scaffy and Lawson. Lawson's not here today, but Dan, my friend Levo, is covering for him. We actually had in connection to this song, we had a message that we received yesterday by Simon, and he said, "Hey, really great discussion on love. It made me think God cares about small birds. How much more does he care about us?" Mm. Absolutely, Simon. It's quite amazing. It is quite amazing. God does care about the small birds that we have no idea what they're doing, and God is just like has his eye on them. It's helping them to get their food, and not one sparrow falls without the Father knowing. It's amazing. This is why the love of God is really unfathomable. It's unsearchable. It's really beyond our human brains can actually comprehend. Mm. But the great news is we can learn something more about it every day.
And we have been learning a lot about it this morning, Scaffy. all the way from the conversation we had about agape and phileo and the depth of God's love through to this song, which is really amazing.
Absolutely. And also, just before we get back into our Bible study here, we're talking about the covenant. I just want to give a reminder to everyone to text us with the word hashtag Down Under. We still have a couple of copies from Devotions from Down Under, which is a book with 26 of the most incredible inventions that you probably did not know were made by Aussies and Kiwis, plus spiritual applications attached to it. It's a very nice book. It's just something that you can read a little bit every day or every week, maybe on the Friday evening when you're, you know, celebrating the beginning of the Sabbath in your life. Who knows? This is a great book for that. It's a devotion. It's going to be great for adults, for children, just to, you know, to make it that most interesting person in the room as well, and just bring something to edify. We're talking about using our giftings of words to edify others. Well, there you go. You can edify others by sharing some, you know, cool stories about Australian inventions, like the Hills Hoist, like the Victor lawnmower, the electric fence, and other cool inventions.
I want to know the story of the electric fence. We've got some electric fences at home. I didn't know the story.
There you go.
I'm not sure how I feel about that invention.
Well, I mean, maybe if you're trying to keep some.
It has done us good when we have been training our dog, but it was also really, really bad when my grandfather would just grab a hold of it while he was holding my hand.
Very traumatic.
That's right. That's right. Well, it's supposed to keep, you know, dingoes out, I think. So. All righty.
Quiz.
Quiz question.
Quiz so question,
the last one for today. Yes.
An answer to give away, and then our last quiz question.
So Jesus was crucified between two what?
Thieves.
Two thieves.
Or criminals. Yeah, I take that too. But yeah,
would you have taken two people?
A bit too generic.
Generic. Yeah. But thankfully nobody texted in that generic. But it was true. Two other people he was crucified between, for sure. All right. Our last question.
I just want to say a quick thing. This is one of the many prophecies about Jesus that was fulfilled, because in Isaiah 53, it says that the Messiah, that his grave would have been assigned with the wicked men, yet he was with the rich man in his death. So Jesus was crucified, he was counted as a transgressor, he was counted with the wicked man, he would be just thrown in a common pit, but he didn't. Joseph of Arimathea offered his own newly hewn tomb to be laid. And this is just an amazing thing. Who would have thought that between two thieves would be the most just and pure being of the entire universe? It's amazing. All right. Beautiful. Next. So what's the next question?
All right. So our last one is a multiple choice. I'll see if you guys can get it before I give out the multiple choices.
Okay. All righty.
Sarah was buried in a cave in the field of.
Oh, I know that one.
In the field of, yes.
Yeah, very good. Good at you, Ben. Yeah.
Very good. So we have only three options for our listening neighbor, and they are A, Jerusalem, B, Machpelah, or C, Seir. So those are your three options, A, B, or C. 0491-064-669. Sarah was buried in a cave in the field of A, Jerusalem, B, Machpelah, or C, Seir.
Very good.
Yes. One of those that I know I'm pronouncing correctly. But
that's
anyways,
right.
Hopefully.
And it was in a field in that place, and it was actually under an oak tree.
Yeah.
It was under an oak. Apparently there's a big oak there that, not only Sarah, but other people in Abraham's family were buried there, if I'm
so
not mistaken.
So there was a cave, because it says she's in a cave.
It's a cave, but it was,
and
I think it was next to.
And then above it was a tree.
Above the cave was a tree?
Okay.
Yeah, it was nearby. It was definitely a landmark.
The tree was a landmark. The Terebinth tree, right?
Terebinth tree, okay.
Which I think is the same as an oak tree.
Same, yeah.
It's called the Cave of Patriots too, isn't it? It's referred to because.
Yeah, and there's a number of the family of Abraham that are buried there.
That's right.
I think that Rachel is buried there.
Yes,
yes. Was buried there. Mm-hmm. Very good. All righty. Fantastic. Okay, let's get back into our Bible study here today. We're talking about God's covenant. So what is a covenant? So Dan, what's your, you know, your wanderings around the Bible and your studies here? How did you wrap your mind around that idea of what a covenant is?
My mind goes straight to contract.
Okay.
But contract is maybe a little bit too legal and a bit weak. It doesn't cover the full depth of meaning of covenant. Covenant, maybe a better analogy might be the marriage covenant.
Yeah.
Like it's an agreement, but there's a lot of emotion. It's your whole being that's wrapped up in this agreement. More than just an agreement, it's your life. Like you are, it's total commitment.
That's right. I love it. I think that you really got to the crux of it. The Hebrew word for a covenant is berit. And berit means like a link in a chain. Like the actual, let's say, what's the word? The literal sense of that word is like a chain. So you and I are chained together with links of love. So it is a contract in that it has stipulations. Like, look, this party, this is your responsibilities and this is your privileges and benefits in the contract. And these are the penalties if you don't abide by the contract. But it's not just that. So people would go into commercial transactional covenants, which are more long. But this is the thing about the covenant as well, different from just a normal contract. A covenant had only one expiry date, death.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was a life or death. It was an agreement that you entered with life, and you could only live it with lots of life. It's a for good thing. It's an eternal thing. Mm. Eternal in the sense that it goes until the parties are there. And that's the difference between that and like just a business contract. There's usually business contracts. They have I deliver you the goods and you give me the payment. And if you receive the goods within the specifications, you know, I'm released from any other duties.
Yeah. And you forget the contract.
Forget the contract. And if you like it, we can get into it again and so on. It's a buy and selling contract. A covenant, it's a life or death thing.
Mm.
And
lifelong.
It involves that participation. So in the ancient Near East, that was a law instrument that was quite widely used. It was just peoples with their gods, they had a covenant between nations, particularly when you had a vassal nation and a stronger nation where you know, often they would have covenant between them where they say, look, we will be loyal to you if you protect us from our enemies. Friendships could be covenants. So for example, David and Jonathan, they entered into a covenant of friendship. They say, look, we're going to be friends for life. And as you said very well, and I'm saving the best for last then, marriage was also a covenant.
Mm.
And in marriage, I think it's probably the best analogy of all that we can use for a contract in that, you know, in a marriage relationship, what do we say? We say, look, I promise to be faithful to you as my spouse to the exclusion of all other people in the world. And I'll be faithful to you, you know, whether we are rich, if we are poor, if you are sick, if you are healthy, for good or for worse. These are traditional marriage vows that are still repeated today. Every time that I celebrate a marriage, I make sure that I try to really sell to the newbies, to people getting married.
Yeah, Lawson's going to be getting married.
Lawson's going to get married. He's going to be reciting that and saying, look, I'm going to be faithful to you. And in exchange to that, I will receive your allegiance as well, your affection.
Mm.
We are able to start our own family and have our intimacy and so on and so forth. So God, when God is talking to his people, and that is quite a change when you look into how other gods related to their people. Other gods related to their people is like, you're my slaves.
Mm.
That's our covenant. You're my slaves. You do what I do and I don't destroy you and I give you things. Whereas God said, no, I'm actually in a covenant relationship with you. I'm in like a marriage. Like God is a God that is like marrying his people saying, and I'm going to be your God. You're going to be my people. I'm going to protect you. I'm going to bless you. And in exchange, I want you to be a blessing to others. And I also want you to be faithful to my covenant, to my laws.
Mm.
And this is the thing that we are going to see. God's love for us is unconditional, but staying in the covenantal love with God, in the covenant relationship with God, it's actually conditional.
Hmm.
There are conditions to that. And this is something that it might sound quite weird. It's like, well, what are you saying? Are you saying that God's love is unconditional? Saying no. There are elements of God's love that are absolutely unconditional. Like God's goodwill towards you, God's desire to save you. God, you know, he pours down the rain and the sun on both the righteous and the unrighteous. This is the unconditional bits. But there are conditional bits. God's blessings within the context of the covenant, they are conditional to staying with the covenant, to obedience.
Mm.
And this is why when we're reading the Bible, often the favorite words of the prophets, when the people sinned, it's not like you have sinned. They say you have broken the covenant. To break the covenant is to say, hey, look, you have done something. You have crossed a boundary that God has established here. You have crossed that boundary and you know, we have to amend the relationship. We have to do something about it. Because we are not in good terms at the moment.
Mm, mm.
The thing is, how do we get back into that covenant?
You're listening to the Breakfast Joe podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
This morning, we've been talking about God's covenant, and tomorrow we're going to continue that conversation, particularly the conditional and the unconditional elements of the covenant. This is going to be quite fascinating to learn a little bit more about God's love for us, since it's always a great topic. Ben and I were just having a chat here about some of his adventures with sheep shearing. One of the new skills that he's getting in his property here is quite the high stakes. He was telling me here, you can actually hurt your sheep, right, if you don't do it right.
Yeah, so we were probably a lot more anxious about it than a professional shearer who can shear their sheep in under 60 seconds. Yeah, yeah. It took us probably a couple of days to shear our two sheep. Not doing it the
whole
time.
Oh, you did it in parts.
Yeah. And yeah, if you get it wrong, like, and this was on our minds, if you get it wrong, the sheep can bleed to death. So, we were making sure that we weren't, going too, aggressive with the sheep.
There you go. Once you're good at it and you're doing your own sheep shearing seminars, I'm raising my hand. That would be an interesting, fun skill to get to learn. Very good. Let's give away the answer to the quiz question. And, so Shell, what are we looking for here? What was the name of the cave?
So, yeah, that last song was all about their journey to Canaan, where Abraham and Sarah, and I love it said, long after we are dead and gone, for thousands of years our tale lives on. And here we are talking about their burial place right now, and the place that they were buried, well, Sarah in particular, as our question was buried in the cave of, in the field of Machpelah.
Okay.
Machpelah.
And I am looking here. It looks like Leah and Rebecca, as well as Sarah, are buried there.
Along with their husbands.
Yeah, and actually you can visit that place. We know where, apparently, where it is. And it says here that it's the world's oldest Jewish site and the second holiest place for Jewish people, according to some sources here.
That's because they believe that it's the entrance to the Garden of Eden as well.
Yeah.
Interesting.
All right. Interesting. Well, but there you go. That's an interesting place to visit if you are going to the Middle East anytime soon for a
Bible lens
tour.
I'm going to put that one into the question of the day for Lyle to answer. Is it the entrance?
Is it the entrance? I'm actually going to ask, is it the actual cave of Machpelah? Because you know how a lot of places. This is where Jesus sweat. And this is, they create a whole bunch of, there's like five different places where Jesus had the Last Supper Jerusalem. So. Yeah.
And I've been to the two tombs in Jerusalem.
I've been to the two tombs. There you go.
And there's the two skulls. I can't remember who it was, but was it David or was, I can't remember which, but one when he's young and one when he's older. The skulls.
Really? Yeah. So there you go. So a lot of the quote unquote tradition in the archaeological terms, they're just like someone made it up and they're milking that cow. So, Dan, we're getting to the end of our show. Just there is actually, we have one listener here claiming the resource, the Down Under book. Actually, there's a couple of seconds still left and you can still claim it. Just text us with the hashtag Down Under. That number actually is from New Zealand. And it ends with 727. So friend, if it's you, please let us know your name. We'd love to know your name. But unfortunately, we cannot get across our resources to New Zealand yet. We cannot send it to you, but we can, you know, we'd love to get to know your name and get to know you a little bit better. And thank you for listening to us. Dan, before we get into the end of our show, I want to ask you a question. Do you have any highlights, any moment of the show that stood out to you from this morning?
Hey, look, thank you for inviting me to join. This is my first time hosting a radio show, so co-hosting or filling in host, whatever you call it. I don't even know what I'm talking about, but thank you, Scaffy, for carrying the show today. It's been fun with you and learning a lot about love and covenant, agape love. I just wanted to add one more thing if I've got a few seconds
to do
so. You said that there is some conditionality with God's covenantal love. There is, and there's also unconditionality as well. God's love is ultimately faithful and perfect, and you know it's so wonderful and so generous. But the conditionality actually makes sense. If there was no conditionality at all, if God just imposed his love on us, it would kind of be like rape. So it's like
good point.
Like marriage. There has to be some reciprocation, otherwise it's effectively rape.
No relationship is I am the only one who gives, and you just receive and take.
Yeah.
That doesn't really work.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not different in relationship with God as well.
Yeah.
There is that. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Dan. It's great to have you here. And thanks for listening, everyone. We will be back tomorrow with more. So in the meantime, do not forget to talk faith, live faith, and act faith, and you will grow strong in your faith.
God be with you till we meet again.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.